Hello and welcome back to another episode of Let's Talk Security Testing. Today we're going to be talking all about how to scale a security testing program. So Tom, before we get going, why don't you kick us off with what we mean by scalability? And is that just a buzzword?
It's not just a buzzword, right? I think scalability, there's a few factors that go into it. It's about being able to address the range of technologies that organizations are expected to use these days. You know, I mean, look at us, right? We joke all the time. We've got 36 SaaS subscriptions alone, and we're only an 8-person organization, right? Then there's the cadence of change, right? Organizations are building constantly, building agile. They're changing every single day of the year. And trying to find a way that you can actually incorporate security testing into this vast array of different technologies and vast array of different change types is a genuine challenge for business. And that's what I see as the scalability, or at least the scalability challenge.
Sure. And are you talking more here around automation? Are you talking around human testing? Or is this challenge prevalent across the breadth of different types of tests?
Well, I think, yeah, humans notoriously don't scale as well as automation does, right? Automation is probably what you turn to when you are trying to find easier ways to be able to scale. It's not infallible. Automation is less flexible than people are in a lot of cases. So I think that you're going to need to find a hybrid approach to being able to do that. But I mean, you've tried to build out teams and tried to find ways to be able to address this problem through people before. What's your experience been?
I mean, ultimately, you need to. Humans can scale, but I think now more than ever, humans need to be focused on what only they can do. We do this in many different verticals. You know, obviously, I tend to look after the sales domain for my sins, and sales has made huge strides over the last 5 to 10 years of stripping out as many tasks as physically possible from commercial people, effectively. You know, talking about replying to emails, reminders, remembering to do calls, LinkedIn messages, automating those to some extent, or at least helping to write a body of the text that you need to write. Grabbing relevant materials based on customers' challenges. You know, you come to me and say, I'm struggling with scaling my security testing program, and that's a challenge that we solve. I should be able to quite easily navigate to find those documents. So there's lots of different ways in which we use technology to aid and assist, but ultimately scaling humans, you are still left with that challenge of there are only a certain number of activities a human can do in a day. And they come with a lot more challenges that technology doesn't come with in terms of things like annual leave, staff rotation, turnover, all that sort of stuff. So yeah, naturally, it is a struggle.
So is that what you see scalability as then? Effectively, just removing friction in repetitive processes.
Yes, I think so. I think. Well, it depends, right? So there's lots that goes into scalability. I think that you start with the reason why you need to scale in the first place. So you're looking to is it in a security context where we're looking to be able to meet the demand of processing more events? Are we looking to do more tests? In a general context, we talk about a company scaling. It's like, okay, how do we get more revenue and make sure that business operations can cope with that? So you start with looking at the reasons of why you want to scale, because that builds a more contextual picture of the plan. And then from then on, it's a case of it's not just about, you know, like take the revenue point I made earlier. It's not just about how do we scale revenue or how do we scale operations with revenue. You know, there's lots of different areas that scale at the same time. Take this back into a CITIC security testing context, you could argue that scaling security testing is one thing, but actually in a dynamic, fast-moving environment where, you know, businesses are changing 10 times quicker than they were changing 5 years ago, particularly in an AppSec world. Understanding what you need to test continuously, scalable, in a scalable way, is equally as important of a challenge as actually carrying out said tests. So there's lots of, I think, context that needs to go into any conversation around scalability.
Why, you know, why is understanding what to test so hard?
I think because, I mean, look at the way that we do it, right? And then you'll get that picture. How far do you have to look to find a business that runs monthly vulnerability scans on an annual test? Like, ultimately, you could do as many changes as you want, and that process would stick in place. Why is it sticking in place? Well, because it's easier to just test everything periodically than it is to try and work out what needs tested continuously. The challenge of being able to dig into specific instances of where tests might need to happen is incredibly difficult to do, almost impossible to do with humans. But the benefit of having technology that assists you in finding those tests that needs to be performed in a granular level is that you get better quality output, right? You can actually start to link vulnerabilities to events. You can start to build a more contextual picture on a vulnerability by vulnerability basis. Maybe solve some of those strategic challenges you've got further downstream in relation to vulnerability management. So there's benefits, right? But I don't necessarily think it's a sort of cut and dry, if you like, from, you know, there are catch-all ways of making sure that you can scale one without scaling the other, but you also have to look at the limitations of that approach at the same time.
I think that's, you know, I think that's something I've seen a lot, you know, when businesses try to scale security testing programs, what they see themselves doing a lot of the time isn't really scaling. It's making the testing program larger. It's more sort of more repetitive, but they are trading quality for that, right? By introducing automation instead of people, mm-hmm. blanket across the board, it feels more scalable, but the product of that automation is not necessarily always as complete as when you had the people in it. And I think, yeah, that's one of the big challenges with any scaling program, is making sure that you understand what quality looks like, or what the key performance indicators that you need to be able to see
yeah.
are, and making sure whatever decision that you make is still going to keep those KPIs at the levels that you need them to.
Yeah, I think you know, one of the best analogies I think of this, and it's really pertinent to the Citix position as well, is that we used to develop in using a waterfall method. Right, so we used to do huge blocks of work, and then we'd release those huge blocks of work. But we decided that actually continuous deployment, continuous integration, whatever you want to call it, that was a better approach. Why was that a better approach? Quickly. Why is it better to move to continuous deployment rather than waterfall deployment?
I mean, there's a lot of reasons, but I think closing that feedback loop is the main one, right? You learn quickly and you course correct quickly.
100%. And when we did that in the business world, or lots of businesses have done that, we didn't do anything to our security testing program, right? Someone just went, well, I do a monthly vulnerability scan and an annual test. We could just do more of that. You know, we could do a bigger vulnerability scan every month. We could do a bigger annual test, right? But the same benefits apply. You know, if you went to flick your security testing program to continuous deployment, right, or a similar method, then you get the similar benefits. You get quicker feedback loops. You get all those things. So I think, you know, there's lots of scalability going on within business, full stop. Does security always keep pace, or does it sort of dig its heels in and stick to its processes? I mean, I guess it differs dependent on where you look. And there are many different ways to skin this cat, right? There are many different ways to become slightly more scalable in the way that we're doing things. A really good example of this is what we've seen in the defensive side of security, you know, in the SOC space. Monumental strides. Look at businesses like Tynes, like, you know, making huge inroads into automating everyday operations of some of the analysts that sit in these SOCs, both third parties and inside businesses. You know, they're writing their own playbooks for specific use cases within their businesses. That's all to do with scalability. So it is a pressing challenge that's been dealt with. One question I had to throw back to you is is AI. You know, explain to me how you think AI is or might be helping to assist with this challenge from a scalability standpoint.
Well, assist with the challenge is a funny way of phrasing it, right? Because AI is both assisting in creating the challenge for security teams and has the potential, albeit not being adopted that widely, to assist in solving the challenge of scalability. I think the ways that it's introducing scalability challenges are talked about quite a lot. You know, every other department in every business is adopting AI pretty broadly, and it's a new concept. It's got its own challenges, whether it's sending your data to a third party, an unknown entity that's then processing that data, whether it's understanding those decisions and those responses that are coming back might not actually be as convincing as they are, might not be accurate, or whether it's your own obligations, if you're training a model and you're building something yourself, your own obligations towards your customer to protect their data and to protect their intellectual property. It gets to be quite a complex problem. And if every business is running out to try and, or every business department is running out to try and find AI, then it introduces a massive scalability challenge for security teams to be able to mobilize towards solving that problem. But having said that, AI is brilliant at two things as far as I'm concerned. The first thing is processing vast amounts of data that you could not process manually by hand. And the second thing is being able to do low-level decision-making, not making the massive decisions that are going to completely change the course of a business, but being able to make quick split-second decisions about simple things like, you know, is this event something that might need to be looked at later down, you know, does it look like, whether it's an event about a potential indicator of compromise, whether it's an event that something's changed that might need security testing. AI is brilliant at parsing hundreds and thousands of these to be able to start to build a picture that then a person can step in, because we shouldn't be removing people. As I say, they're necessary to keep the quality, but only to get a person to step in once we've been able to process this data and seen the opportunity to, or the need to, hand it off.
100%. And then we're talking about scaling security testing here, right? You know, this is the Let's Talk Security Testing podcast. We could digress and digress and digress, but let's bring this home. So Let's Talk Security Testing, scaling security testing programs. Explain to me why it's easy to get lost into the vulnerability management space, but what actually we're talking about, what predates that?
Yeah, I mean, vulnerability management is a funny one. We speak to organizations that describe themselves as having, you know, the problem that they've got is that they've got hundreds of thousands of vulnerabilities in a backlog. And so the way that the market has responded is it's trying to find ways to deal with these hundreds of thousands of vulnerabilities.
And this is the sort of threat exposure management that everyone's been hearing over and over and over again.
But that's a data output problem, and I think where a lot of people have missed the trick is that actually, if we got better quality of data in, we wouldn't have hundreds of thousands of vulnerabilities. You know, bring it back to its source. Look at ways to be able to identify deficiencies earlier so they don't become vulnerabilities. Or look at ways to identify more strategic testing paths that mean that we don't end up finding false positives, and instead we can actually only feed things into a vulnerability management program when we are confident that they are both accurate and actionable. I think that's, you know, I think that's really where we need to move to as an industry, is not just trying to be this sort of reactive deal with this massive, massive backlog, but instead be proactive and actually try and move, you know, shift left in our entire security testing program. And I don't mean just in the development process, shift left and test, you know, at code level or something like that. I mean just look at how we're actually going about identifying and orchestrating these tests to begin with, and determining what is the appropriate way to identify the vulnerabilities at the start.
Makes total sense. Right, so moving swiftly on to try and get through this in the right amount of time. Three challenges of scaling a security testing program. I put it to you that there are three big challenges when looking at scaling a security testing program. Fundamentally, understanding what to test, carrying out said tests, and the cross-functional you know, different types of infrastructure, technologies across the plane. You know, the differences between doing this in infrastructure, doing this in applications, doing this in cloud.
Mm-hmm.
What's your reception to that? And do you agree they're probably the three main challenges?
100%. I think they're the main challenges. You know, what to test? I said it before. We have 30 odd SaaS subscriptions alone. And we're a very small business. You know, the vastness of variation inside a business means that you cannot test every system every minute of every day, mm-hmm. right? You have to be very, very selective and very refined about what it is that you choose to test at a given time. It doesn't matter how scalable your operations are. At some point, you're going to need to pick a target list, and it's going to need to be a sample of what you've got. I think you can, you know, that carries on then into determining how you're going to carry out the testing, because automation can test a much, much larger sample than people can, right? Automation, you can scan every IP endpoint you've got or every URL you've got. But the reality is that there are things like business logic flaws, for example, that automation is not very good at being able to find, that mean that you can't reliably test for that across every single application, every single endpoint you've got. If you've got 100, 200, 300 apps and two or three pen testers available to you. And then the remind me what the third one was.
Technologies. The lots and lots of different technologies in businesses. Cloud, infrastructure, code. How do you make sure that you're across that?
Yeah, so, I mean, that third one sort of, it echoes back to the first point that I made, you know, trying to the diversity of what people have and understanding how those things work interconnected is fundamental to being able to understand how to go about testing them and what kinds of vulnerabilities might need to be presented within them. So I think when we're looking at all three of those challenges, what we really need to be talking about is a sort of higher level principle of where in amongst all of that mess are vulnerabilities likely to be, and then we can start figuring out how we're going to go about testing it. So if we start to think about, you know, where do vulnerabilities come from in the first place? Vulnerabilities come from changes that people make. People make mistakes or people introduce things that can expose systems to an additional level of risk. Or they come from people doing research and identifying new exploits that are present in known and common pieces of software. And I think if we've got to grips with that concept, that's where vulnerabilities come from, I think we can start to just say, okay, yes, we've got this big, complex, intricate web of assets across our entire estate, but all we really need to be doing is listening for those changes and listening for that intelligence about those publicly disclosed vulnerabilities. And as long as we're doing that, then that will point us in the direction of where we need to be looking.
Perfect. Let's create a scalable way to look and identify where vulnerabilities might be, and then create a scalable way to carry out tests to identify whether or not those vulnerabilities really do exist. And if we can do those two things, then we should have a scalable security testing program. But that sounds quite expensive, right? If you're going to go try and take that as a third-party solution or try and build it internally or try and do it without any advice, you know, what are some of the things people can do today to make their security testing program more scalable right from the off?
Yeah, I mean, ways that people could scale their security testing program, you know. We've spoken about automation. Automation is brilliant for a lot of things. You know, scanners used to be a sort of a backup resource. Now I think scanners dominate most of the responsibility for finding vulnerabilities. They can probably do about 80% of what a person can do in a lot of technologies. There are still things that they cannot find. They can't understand permission systems like a person can. They can't understand business logic like a person can. And they're not as good, although they are getting a lot better at being able to chain vulnerabilities together to increase the overall impact. But whether it's an off-the-shelf tool or whether it's an open-source alternative, there's loads and loads of automations out there with things like Z-Attack Proxy and OpenVAS and SemGrep that you can implement today in order to start identifying vulnerabilities and crucially identifying them earlier in the process, because you can just build them into your pipelines and build them into your deployment processes.
Yeah. It's probably worth mentioning as well that these tools are fantastic, and they should always, I think, in 2024, scanners should be front-running humans at every opportunity. But also, there are products out there similar to the product that we've built here at Cytix that effectively maps an area, maps an environment, understands where vulnerabilities are likely to be, and creates sensible test paths off the back of those. What you're effectively doing then is by putting, rather than just putting a scanner to front run a human, you're putting a piece of technology to front run a scanner to identify where that scanner needs to go. Then you're allowing the scanner to do those things, and then you're bringing the human in. So there's lots of different areas. It's not just a case of saying, well, we've got vulnerability scanners. There are automated tools and processes that can be put in at various different problems to solve various different bottlenecks that can appear in a security testing program.
But crucially, to front run a human, right? At some point, you're going to need a person to step into that process to interpret.
Yeah.
And that's what I think humans are most useful for. That doesn't have to be an internal person. It's brilliant if you can get an internal person to be responsible for that, because they're going to have a depth of knowledge about your business and your business context, but that can be an outsourced resource. That can be a consultancy, or a more modern way of looking at it, it can be a crowdsourced resource. You know, whether it's a bug bounty program or one of these sort of crowdsource penetration testing capabilities, if you run your scans, you run your automation, you identify your low-hanging fruit vulnerabilities, and then after that you bring in a person or a range of people to be able to look at the systems for the things that you've not been able to find, then you can actually cover off a massive, massive area, because they're not spending their time digging through looking at HTTP headers and TLS certificates and that kind of stuff. They're really digging into the meat of the applications and the infrastructure and the environments.
Mm-hmm. And this is not too dissimilar of a solved problem to that we have in defensive security. You know, most businesses these days operate some kind of hybrid model when it comes to security operations. They'll have, whether it's level one internally, level two outsourced, or vice versa. They'll have a number of internal teams, and then they'll have a crowdsourced or outsourced model for picking up the remainder.
Mm-hmm.
The same can apply in the security testing space. Lots of the bug bounty players have triage teams, as well as researchers. You know, you can create a scalable way of making sure that if the business goes through a ridiculous amount of change, if you've got 6 people on annual leave this week because you've messed up with the calendar, you know, there are means of creating a very similar model within the testing space. So we don't need to be fearful of those sort of, you know, huge inroads of events that come through from time to time.
And the other one as well is AI, right? You don't always need a person in order to interpret context these days. Mm. AI is getting better at being able to do that. I think we're seeing a lot of the phobias around AI being dispelled, which I think is brilliant, because it can be brought in both to interpret what needs to be tested and how it needs to be tested, but also then to summarize and sift through the noise of the output of those tests. You know, I spoke before about the idea that these tools create a lot of noise and a lot of false positives. They also create a lot of repetition. You run 3 different tools. If all 3 different tools have turned up the same vulnerability, there's a high likelihood that it is there. But the way that you actually find that all 3 tools that have written the vulnerability in a different way have reported the same vulnerability is you pass those through a model that is able to actually determine the similarities between those 3 different reports, at which point you're probably in a good position to be able to either say that there's a high level of confidence that vulnerability is accurate, or at least to say that it's reasonable to pass it over to a person to be able to
100%.
To look at.
And people, you know, we see a lot of things. We talk about large language models. People immediately go to ChatGPT and those sorts of things and chatbots. And I'm sure everyone listening has heard of all these things. But there are many things AI can do that are supremely useful that whilst using the similar technology, things like classification, right? Even just a process of classification can save humans a load of time later down the track. It doesn't necessarily need to be, you know, thinking of LLMs as something that it's going to start, you know, reading your emails and writing new emails back to somebody else. You know, it can be something as simple as classification that can take huge amounts of work off humans.
Yeah, 100%.
Perfect. Right, so we're going to wrap up for today's episode of Let's Talk Security Testing. We're going to be back in a couple of weeks. And the next episode we're going to do is on the role of LLMs in security testing. So we can do a full deep dive into some of the points that we've been pulling out of today's podcast. If you're sick of hearing about AI, I suggest you skip the next episode. You can also find us on YouTube, Spotify, Amazon Music, and now Apple Music, I believe. Looking forward to speaking to you all soon.
Bye now.
Bye now.